So, before we start, let me start with some very general remarks, some very general advice, if you want, or comments about physics and research. So, one thing that it's very important for you, that I really encourage you, is to master very well mathematics. When we do theoretical physics, mathematics is not the hard part. Mathematics is the trivial part. It's always simple to make something rigorous, to put some epsilon, some delta, some limits, whatever. The abstract part, even the abstract part in math, is not that hard. There are some theorems which we can understand. We might want to delve into the proofs and understand what they are about, but everything is very rigorous and straightforward, and mathematics is not the hard part. On the other hand, it's a very important part of language. So it's very important to master very well the mathematics, both the abstract and the more applied part. Because once you do, then you can really focus on the hard part, which is the physics. So I really advise you, if you have any kind of difficulties with Fourier transforms, Laplace transforms, complex analysis, and so on, sort those out, really. Work hard and make sure that you have no basic gaps in your mathematics education. Because then you can really focus on the hardest part and on the most beautiful part of doing physics, which is thinking about particles, scattering, energy dissipation, and whatever. And you don't need to worry about some Fourier transform. Is it invertible? Do you have Fourier transforms, Fourier series, whatever? Now, more particularly, it's also very good when one is computationally strong. It's annoying to be afraid of computations. I cannot think of this physics problem or that physics problem because it will involve a long computation. It's hard to do this computation. I don't feel like doing it. I'll be tired in the middle. So Mathematica is very helpful. That's one of the good things of Mathematica. So Mathematica is a program that allows you to do everything that you would be able to do with pen and paper. Just you should imagine that you have an army of chickens. Mathematica is not very smart. I mean, you teach Mathematica. Mathematica is as smart as you can be. But you have an army, so you have no excuse not to do some computation because it involves solving 10 differential equations or 20 algebraic equations. That's not an excuse. If that's complicated, okay, that's a parameter. 20 is the number of equations that will appear in some code that you'll be writing. So it's very useful for you not to be afraid of computations, not to be afraid of abstract math. And I really encourage you, if you have to choose between where to split your time, filling in your gaps, really focus on those aspects. Finally, one last general advice is don't underestimate the power of having clean notes and tidy notes. So almost immediately, if you look at someone's computation, if someone is writing on some sheet of paper and you just look at the computation, if the letters are big and going diagonally, the computation is wrong. If the letters are small and clean, the computation is right. And this is almost like 85% of the time it is true. So when you do computations, sometimes it happens to me. I'm doing some computations, I start clean, then I start having doubts, and the letter starts growing and starts going off the lines and so on. Similarly, with Mathematica, it's very important also to try to always have clean codes, clean notebooks, where it really makes a big difference to have things clean. Okay, I think it's enough of blah blah, and we can get going to the serious stuff. So the plan in this morning is in the first half, and we will have to have a break at some point. And I see that there's no tutor here, so it's up to you to tell me when you are falling down, and when you need a break. So let's go over the basics of the Mathematica grammar. So now in Mathematica, I was trying to Google this morning, but I couldn't find. But I remember like 3 or 4 years ago, there were 40,000 functions in Mathematica. And there are like, I don't know, 80 or 100,000 words in English or something like this. So it's of the same order. That's what I want to say. It's like 5%, 10%. So of course I cannot teach you a new language in 2 lectures, right? So the goal, how do you learn Mathematica? You learn Mathematica by looking at other people's notebooks, by looking at other notebooks and playing with them. And what you really need to start is some examples that you can then modify and try to go to help and so on, okay? In particular, Mathematica, as I will show you later, it has a very good built-in help system that is really great to learn. Say if you are working with some function, which is, for example, simplify. Can you guess what simplify does? Simplifies expressions. So if you have simplify and you go to help, at the bottom of the help, it will tell you similar functions to simplify. So if you already know Simplify, you go to help, go to the bottom, and you see similar stuff that you might also like. Okay? It's when you are searching in YouTube and you have the videos that are similar to those. And you can spend hours also browsing through the help of Mathematica. Okay, so can everyone open a Mathematica notebook? So the plan is that you will write as I will, and that's it, basically. So we will all write at the same time. And I typically write kind of fast, so please stop me again if I'm doing it too fast or scrolling up and down too fast. So does everyone have Mathematica installed? And does everyone have Mathematica open, right? So the first we are going to do is to write basics of Mathematica. Okay. So I should zoom in, right? 150 or 200? This is 150. This is 200. Which one is best? 200, very good. So let's write basics of Mathematica. So does everyone write as this? So now, one thing we are going to do right away, or that I will do, if you want, you can keep it as is I will go here and I click Format, Style, no, not Style, Style Sheet, Creative, so you can see what I'm doing. I'm basically going to change the background. A white background is kind of boring, especially hard for you because you will not be able to see the different cells. So I'm going to go all the way here to Natural Color. So please see what I did. So I did Format, Style Sheet, Creative, Natural Color. That's just for the purpose of the lecture. It's more useful. Now it's easier to read, right? And you see that there are objects which are called cells in Mathematica. So there is one empty cell up here, and there is one cell which contains basic of Mathematica written here. Now, if you go down, when you go down, you see it's hard to see. Actually, I would like to have a pointer. You know if there are some pointers here? Okay. It's hard to see, but below basics of Mathematica right now, yeah, you can really not see. There is a line, a thin line. Can you see? Below the cell, basics of Mathematica, there is a line because I went all the way down. And if I start writing something like 2 plus 2, it will start a new cell. Okay? So can everyone write two cells, two separate cells, one with basics of Mathematica written, which is a title, and the other one with 2 plus 2? So in the meantime, while people write, can you tell me who uses Mathematica before? Who else? Wow, amazing. Then I should basically skip shift enter and so on. I know, okay, some people don't. So can you tell again who uses Mathematica? Okay, wow. Who used Mathematica to do algebra computations? Uh-huh. And to solve differential equations? Okay, very good. So for those who are experienced with Mathematica, maybe I should propose some kind of puzzle because the beginning will be kind of boring. So let me tell you a puzzle that you can, a theoretical puzzle that you can solve while I explain the basics of Mathematica. Suppose we have some process in physics, which is a very important process, which is a scattering amplitude. So you send in some particles, you receive some particles, and there is some amplitude, amplitude of probability for different processes. So an amplitude in physics, when you scatter particles, they have some momenta, p1, the particles, p2, these are vectors, four vectors, p3, and so on, up to pn, okay? And this is a function of these vectors, p1 up to pn. Now, let's suppose we are considering massless particles. If we are considering massless particles, pj squared is equal to 0, right? Where by this pj squared, I mean pj component 0 squared minus pj component 1 squared. Right? So an amplitude is a function of some momenta, p1 up to pn, which are all null vectors. Right? Is it okay? So if I draw this momenta, so it's a function One nice way of representing this momenta is you draw P1, which is a null vector, then you draw P2, and so on, until you draw Pn. Can someone tell me why it closes the polygon? Why, if I follow this rule of drawing P1, then P2, then P3, why would it close? Momentum conservation, right? So the exercise is find some null polygon. Find some momenta that are null and add up to zero. Say for 7 particles, for example. Looks trivial, right? You just add some vectors which are null and close. Okay. Find a way of generating many such configurations of 7 particles which add up to zero. Okay? Simple geometrical problem. Is the problem well posed and clear? You might want to try to solve it for Friday as well, those who are now focusing on this part. Okay, so let's go back to what we were doing. And please, again, if you are having trouble typing the same things that I'm typing here, just tell me. I'm not being able to write 2 cells or something like that, and I will go and help you. Now let's select the first cell. By selecting the first cell, I mean we click on the right. You see here, I'm clicking on the right, and this cell becomes selected. And then we want to make this a title. We want Basics of Mathematica to be a title, not to be something that wants to be computed. So we go here, Format, Style, and we change this to say title, for example. Okay, so we select Basics of Mathematica, we go Style, and then we click Title, or Subtitle, or whatever you want. Say we click Title. Now it becomes like this, Basics of Mathematica. Okay? Then we can click here, in between the two cells, so I clicked in between the two cells, so again there is an horizontal line between the title and the first cell, and we can now write we can write shift enter, because as I will explain now, shift enter is the basic command in Mathematica, how you enter expressions. 2 plus 2, if you want to compute and to find out which number it is, you click shift enter, as I will now explain. So let's write shift enter, select the cell, go again to format, style, and now make it some kind of subtitle or section, say, for example, section. And we get here Mathematica, Basics of Mathematica, and this is the stuff where we learn what is shift enter. This is an example of keeping a tidy notebook. Don't underestimate, again, the usefulness of having these titles and subtitles and so on. Also, it will become clear in a moment why this is even more useful, because you can collapse different sections and make everything very compact. Okay, finally, we can start computing. 2 plus 2, we write this in a cell, and we click shift enter. And when we click shift enter, we get 4. Okay, everything is consistent so far. Okay? So, does everyone have this kind of screen? With a title, a subtitle, and then 2 plus 2 equals 4. Yes? Now, again, I'm not sure if I'm going too fast, too slow, or something. Now, let's go and, this is annoying. Let's learn about equal signs. Equal signs is important when you want to define something, define a function, and there are several equal signs as I now explain. So we write equal signs, we select the cell, and we make another section. We learned already about shift enter, which is important. Now let's learn about different equal signs, different kind of ways of defining functions. So we write equal signs, we select the cell, we go to format, style, and we make it again a section. Now you see that there is some symbol there, command 4, which tells me that I could use a shortcut. I could just select the cell and click command 4, and that will be much faster, and that's what I'm going to do from now on. Section. And now we have here equal signs. So suppose we write the following. Sine of x square plus cosine of x square. Okay? And now we want, we compute this and we get cosine squared plus sine squared. Now, cosine squared plus sine squared is 1. So it should be possible to get 1, but that's simple. We just ask Mathematica, please simplify this expression. And indeed, when we ask to simplify this expression, we do get 1. Now, one thing I want you to know is that this symbol here, square, which you normally do hat 2, right? You can also use shortcuts, so there are plenty of them. And it might be that sometimes I will forget that you don't know and I will start using all these shortcuts. I can click Control 2. No, not Control 2. Control 7. No, not Control 7. Control 6. Yeah, I know all of them, but I don't know what they are. I know if I start, if I type, it works, but I don't know by heart what they are. So if you type Control 6 here at the end of sine, I automatically get some exponent, and then I can put a 2. And then I click right to leave this box, and I write plus cosine of x, Control 6 again, 2. Okay? So this here is using Control plus 6. This is the way of entering comments in Mathematica. If you want a comment, something that Mathematica doesn't run, you use parentheses, star, then you write, and star, and then you close parentheses. Okay, very good. Now, suppose we want to define a function that simplifies stuff. We don't want to write always this simplify stuff. We want to write a function that, I don't know, let's write something a bit more sophisticated, something that adds 1 and then simplifies the expression. So suppose we want to write something that does the following. S of something, and when you want something which is a variable, you put x underscore. And now, let me write you two things and then explain you why one works and the other doesn't work. One, we write S of something is simplify of something plus 1. This is the function we want. And now let's write another one, which is S2, which has a 2 dots here. Okay? So let's write this. Let's write these two definitions, one with 2 dots and the other without 2 dots. Now, this is one of the most important distinctions in Mathematica, is the use of these 2 dots versus the use of just an equal sign. And it will become clear now what is the difference. So we run these two, and now we can try to run simplify of cosine squared plus sine squared. We run and it doesn't work. And we run the second function and it works. So let me explain you what's the difference between this S and this S2. The difference is that the way Mathematica thinks of this is a delayed or not delayed. This means S2 of something is what? Take that something, add 1, and then simplify. But the fact that you have 2 dots means do it only when I tell you what is x. So it's delayed. Don't do it yet. Wait till I tell you what is x, and then do it. Whereas in the first line, no. Mathematica first simplifies x plus 1. What is the simplification of x plus 1? It's x plus 1. There's nothing to simplify. And that's what function s of x is. It is just x, 1 plus x. So it simplified too early. It simplified before I told her what was x. Okay? So without the delayed, it means S of x is just x plus 1. Because simplify of x plus 1 is x plus 1. Because we did not tell what x is. Okay? So if you are starting with Mathematica and you are not sure, of course, the best is to always use the delayed one. But that can make things extremely slow sometimes, as we will see later. Now, notice that 1 plus x appeared here. Why did it appear? Let's break this into two different cells. So let's copy this and remove it and put it into a different cell. So we go down and we put in a different cell. And now let's run this cell and this cell. So if we run this cell, there's no output. And if we run the first cell, there is output. Why? Someone who doesn't use Mathematica before. Does this make sense? from what I said before? That this cell, when I run it, I have some input, there's no output. And this one, when I run it, there is an output. Well, I hope this makes sense, right? Because as I said, here, of course, there can be no output. The rules of the game are compute this only when I tell you what is x. So how could there be an output? I didn't tell what is x. This is delayed, right? I defined the function, and later I will tell what x is. Whereas here, I said compute this, and this is what the function is. So I can compute it right now. I compute, simplify x plus 1, I get 1 plus x. Now, if we don't want to see the outputs, we put a semicolon at the end. And this tells, don't show me the output. Here it's too obvious what 1 plus x is. And now we run again, and the output is hidden. So when we put a semicolon at the end, there is no output. Very good. Now, this kind of equal sign, so we already, let's add here to the title. There is this one versus this one. There's also this one. So we see it, both are used to assign, to define stuff. But there are more. There are also, for example, equal equal. Equal equal is used for comparisons. It's not for assigning, for defining something, but for comparing stuff. So we can compare 2 and 3. By the way, can I zoom out a bit or it becomes too small? Let me try to zoom out to 150. Is this still visible or does it become too small? 200 is better? Okay. Very good. So 2 plus 2 equal equal 3 will give me false, which is good. 2 is not equal to 3. If I write A equal equal B, it doesn't know. I mean, she's agnostic. I mean, yeah, maybe. A might be equal to B or not. I mean, what do I know? You didn't tell me what A and B are. Right? Who knows? Now, if I ask, let's be more rigorous. Does A look like B? Is A really the same thing as B? Is an A the same as a B? No, okay, that's false. So this is a super strong comparison. Really, two things are only equal if they really are the same object, if A is the same as B and A is not B. And this one, it's waiting a bit till you tell what A and B are. Okay? Very good. So, for example, we might want to do solve x plus 1 equal equal to x squared and solve it for the variable x. So this is, for example, the syntax for solve. So you see, you don't want to assign this to that. You want to, it's a comparison. Solve x plus 1 equal equal x squared, comma x, and you run. And you get that there are two possibilities. X is 1 minus square root of 5 over 2 or 1 plus square root of 5 over 2. And we will understand this syntax with this arrow here. It means a replacement in a moment. But for now, let's just see that this solution looks like something reasonable. Now, about what I was saying before. When we use now two functions. I showed you simplify, and now I just showed you solve. Okay. Suppose these are the only two functions you know. I mean, you started now using Mathematica. For some of you, this is really a true statement, right? You only know simplify and solve. But you want to learn some more. So a very useful thing to do is to select simplify, for example. So I selected simplify. So simplify is underlined. It's really impossible to see. Is it possible to change the lights a bit so that it becomes? Let me try. No, it didn't help. Okay. Does it help? Do you see better now? Okay, I don't see better. Okay. So simplify. No, this is probably not a good idea. Simplify is selected. And now in Windows and probably in Linux, you click F1. In Mac, for some strange reason, you click Control Shift F. And you go to help. So I just click. And it opened help for simplify. Okay? And now, and the help is something extremely useful. So let's zoom in again and see what the help for Simplify looks like. So the help of Simplify tells you the following. First, it tells you what is the syntax. You see, Simplify is an object that can take either one or two arguments. If you do simplify of some expression, it simplifies the expression like we had before, cosine squared plus sine squared. It can also take two arguments, in one case, an expression and some set of assumptions, right? So it might be useful, for example, you might want to say simplify this assuming x is positive. And here are some examples, for example. You take, there are some basic examples. You integrate this and then take derivative and you get this mess. But of course, if you integrate and take the derivative, this should be the same as the original stuff. And if you ask simplify, and this symbol means the last the last thing you computed, indeed it gives the original expression. Oh, and there's even the example I used. Simplify this gives one. Very useful, therefore, to have examples. But what I think is the most useful of all is when you go down here, that thing that I was telling you before, this C also. Of course, if you are simplifying the expressions and at some point it was not working, and then you open help and you see, wow, there's something more powerful than simplify. There is a full simplify. And indeed, that's often what you need. Often simplify doesn't simplify enough, and you need something more powerful, of course slower, which is full simplify. Full simplify works harder to try to simplify the expressions. And then sometimes simplify is so slow, and then you look here and you see some refine. And you wonder, what is this refine? Refine is really a very fast simplify, but that doesn't simplify very much. Just takes into account that, say, square root of x squared, if x is positive, is x. Right? So it is some minor simplifications. As you learn about some assumptions and get rid of square roots of x squares and stuff like this, which can be easily simplified. And you learn about many things that you can use to simplify your expressions, such as factor, for example. Let's use factor. Let's close help and see. How could we use factor, of course? Factor x squared minus 1. And it gives x plus 1 times x minus 1. So indeed, sometimes that's what we want. We want a particular kind of simplification, one that factors, for example. So very useful, this help, and very, very useful, this C also. Now let's learn something else. Let's write lists. Lists means vectors, matrices, anything that is related to algebra, you need to work with lists. So let's select lists. Let's make it a section again. That is, I select the cell. So I selected the cell. This cell is selected. I click here on the right. And then we make it a section by using the shortcut or by going to format, style, and so on. So I click Command 4. Control 4, and now it's a section. Now, I was telling you in the beginning that you should have very clean notes and so on, all this spill, but then I have this huge notebook here, which is anything but clean. So one thing we can do to make it look clean is the following. You click here on the right, and now it's selected. You see, if you click on the very right, there are several lines, but this selects all the way up this section that was written above. And now you double click it. And when you double click, it collapses this section. So it's hidden here. Okay? It's like you have some binder and you have some titles and things are tidy. And I can again go here, select this section here. The full section is selected, double click and it's minimized. And if I want to open it again, I just double click there and it opens. So now I'm going to introduce a list. So to introduce a vector, you write list equal, and then this parenthesis A, B, C, and then bracket again. So did everyone manage to collapse the sections? And does everyone have such a nice screen where everything fits in one screen with some list equal A, B, C, which is a vector of three elements? So this is, if I run, this is what I get. I get A, B, C. So at this point, normally some people didn't manage to collapse the sections because it was a bit too fast and so on. But those people are shy. Is everyone okay? Yeah? So did everyone manage to get this screen? Otherwise, I can quickly go and help you out. Okay. So we have a vector here, A, B, C. And let me postpone this. Now, if you want to ask how does Mathematica see, if you want to ask to see this in a matrix form, you can have matrix form of this list, and this will give you this vector in this column notation, A, B, C, which we might like more when we think of the vector as being something that will be acted upon by a matrix. This is just for our visualization purposes. We can do it, and this is just to help us visualize better the object. Now, suppose we want to enter a matrix. Now, matrix. I'm using small letters because big letters, they exist already. If I use capital L for list instead of small l, that exists already. So I'm using small letters because matrix with big M and list with big L, with capital L, is something that already exists. So the way you insert is like this. You have A, B, C, D. Okay. So this is how it looks like. But if you ask, what's the matrix form of this? This is indeed this is a matrix as we like it. So what you do is you enter a column and then another column. And this is the structure that gives. So you enter column by column, and this is a matrix. So a matrix is a list of vectors. So we can enter another matrix, matrix 2, let's say A, B, C, D. And then we can have matrix dot matrix 2, multiplication of two matrices. And it does give something that looks reasonable, but to visualize better, we can apply matrix form to this. And indeed, this looks exactly like the multiplication of two matrices. Now, it's useful, it's often very useful to know how Mathematica thinks of these lists. So if you have list, this is what list is. To learn how Mathematica thinks of this object, you can do either full form or tree form of list. So tree form of list tells you that for Mathematica, this is what this is. It's a function that is the function list with arguments A, B, and C. Okay? So we will from time to time play with this tree form, and you will see that it can be quite useful. This is how Mathematica thinks. For example, if you ask how Mathematica thinks of this matrix, this is how Mathematica thinks. It's a list of two lists. It's a list that has two arguments. The first argument is again a list, which has two arguments, and those arguments are A, B. And the second argument of list is the second column, is the second row, which has two elements, which are C, D. Okay. Now, why is it useful to know how Mathematica thinks of functions? So everything in Mathematica is a tree. That's something that might come as a surprise, but everything in Mathematica is a tree. And what do we do when we compute, when we have some complicated expressions? We take pieces of our expressions and manipulate them, simplify this piece, simplify that piece, exchange these pieces, and so on. The way we have to think about doing all these manipulations that we do automatically by hand, taking some piece of our expression, simplifying it here, simplifying this there, exchanging these two, and so on, will translate into Mathematica, into manipulations with these lists. Take this branch of the tree, simplify this, take the other branch, swap the two branches, and so on. So that's something important. Now, we can have a list which contains a list inside, A, B, C, D. So am I writing too fast? Again, please interact, ask me stuff, and tell me if I'm going too fast. Am I going too slowly? No? OK. So if we have A, B, C, D, so what do you think the tree for this guy is? Well, before I tell you, let's use also for just the previous list. Instead of tree form, let's use full form. Full form of list. That gives the same thing, the same information as tree form. It tells you that this ABC, so if we just run list, we get this ABC. And the way Mathematica thinks of this nice output is like this. There is a function called list of A, B, C. This is what this A, B, C are. Now, how will Mathematica think of this guy? Well, we can ask her, but it will be, of course, list with three arguments, and the second argument will be a list of two arguments. So we can copy this and do full form. And indeed, it's list of A, the second argument is list of B, C, and the third argument is D. It makes sense, right? And again, I can ask what is tree form of this object. And this is a list with three arguments. The second one is itself a list with two arguments, and those arguments are B, C. Okay? So something that is useful when we have this kind of object, B, C, comma, D, is to get rid of these brackets and make this into a vector. Just eliminate the brackets and flatten it out and just write it as A, comma, B, comma, C, comma, D. Okay, so you want to put the B, C here and remove this A, B, C, D. Does someone know what function does this? Those who use Mathematica should know. Sorry? Flatten. Flatten is an extremely useful function. So when you apply flatten to this, it just removes those middle brackets. And it just gives a list with A, B, C, D. Okay? It's a very, very useful function. Another useful function, so let's run list again. When you manipulate lists, it can be lists of equations, it can be vectors, it can be whatever, is to know how to extract components out of that list, right? You have a list and you want to extract the element number one, the element number two, the first two elements, the first three elements, the last element, something like that. So the way you extract elements is the following. You write list, and then if you want to ask what's the first element, you write bracket, bracket, one, bracket, bracket. By the way, if you sometimes think I'm going too fast, or you are not being able to type everything, choose to type some of the stuff and not write the rest. I will put this notebook online for you. So if you feel like you are being able to type this one, but now this one you feel, okay, I'm not going to be able to do it, just skip this one, write the next one, and so on. So if you ask what's the element number one, you get A. That makes sense. If you ask, give me element one up to two, it gives me AB. If you want to ask, give me the last element, you do minus one. So this is how you extract elements, how to extract the first, how to extract the first up to the second, how to extract the last one. So for example, in our previous example, when we had this nested list, when we have A, then B, comma C, then D, if we ask, give me element two, what will this give? Can someone tell me what will element number two of this give? Sorry? Can someone speak slightly louder? It will give BC. Of course, it will not give B because this is a list of three elements. The first is A, the second is the list BC, and the third is D. So indeed, if we ask for the number two, it gives BC. If we want to say, in the second branch of the tree, give me the first element, we can put 2, comma 1. And then this first takes me the second element and then takes me the first element. So again, so what we did here was we asked, in this tree, go to the second branch, you are here, and then go to the first branch, and you went there, which is where B is. Okay? So this is how you navigate in a tree. You say, if you ask list number three, it gives immediately this. If you ask list number two, it gives this. If you ask list number two, comma two, it gives this, and so on. Okay? Okay, very good. So now, let's learn about something else which is important, which is substitutions. Okay? So we make it a new section and we collapse the previous one. Of course, this lecture must be kind of painful. You are learning, I'm teaching you several basic things without some long examples. So what I will try to do is in after the break, so that we will try to start playing with some interesting physical examples. But for now, you need to bear with me and learn some more basic grammar of Mathematica. So what do I mean by substitution? Substitutions means, of course, substitute something by something. So if you have x over x squared plus 1, and now you can say replace x by something, say zeta 3. You know what zeta function is? Zeta 3 is like pi or pi squared or something. Zeta 3 is just some number. Zeta 3 is sum over 1 over k cubed from k equal 1 to infinity. Just some number. Okay? So if you want to know what is zeta 3, what can you do? Well, you can ask, what is zeta? Yes. Ah, yes. Very good. So I wrote the following. I did this and then this. This is the same. But as soon as you type this, and then if you type a space, if you now click space after writing this, it converts into an arrow. Okay? And I did it automatically, probably, I guess. Okay? So this is the same as this. So it replaces by zeta 3. Now, again, how do we learn what zeta is? Well, zeta 3 is a number, so we can ask zeta, we can select and go to help, and it will tell zeta what is it. If you want more information, you click here on more information. Maybe a bit too much. Sorry. So here it is. Zeta of something is the Riemann zeta function, zeta of s. And if the real part is positive, which is the case, zeta of s is just the sum of 1 over k to the power s. So zeta 2, for example, is some pi squared over 6 or something like this. Sum over 1 over k squared, as you know. So if you ask zeta of 2, it's pi squared over 6. Zetas of 3, they are not. They are numbers. Now, it's useful sometimes when you have some expression to ask what's the numerical value of that. And that you use n. So numerical value of pi squared over 6, pi squared is like 3, pi squared is like 9, over 6, it gives more or less 1.6. Yeah? Makes sense. Now, and you can ask what is pi squared of zeta 3, and it's 1.2, so it's some number. Okay, and you can make this replacement, and it just replaced x by zeta 3. Oh, this, sometimes it's useful, it's very useful, always, it's always very useful. Now, again, about shortcuts, I wrote this in this ugly style, x over x squared plus 1. But of course, what we want to write is something like this, right? So how did I write this now, x over x squared plus 1 in this proper human language? So what I did is I typed x. Then I clicked Control 2. No, I always forget. Control 7. No. What did I do? Control slash. This is really hard when you have to type. So I did control slash is this one, control slash, and some fraction appeared. Then I typed x, control 6 to make the 2 appear, and so on. Now, if you are not experienced with this, what you can do in the beginning is click here, palette, basic math assistant. Okay, once you go to palette, and then you have here some help. So you see that, for example, let's see, where are the fractions? Here, no. Probably not this one. It's probably writing assistant. No, it should be this one. Ah, here. No, fraction, yeah. So I'm sorry I cannot magnify this more, but there is here a symbol of a fraction here. And the screen is not... The resolution is not very good, but it's written fraction. And then there is a keyboard entry, and it says here, control plus slash. So it teaches you how to do. But you can just click there. And if you click there, here in the notebook, it created a fraction. And now you can insert whatever you want. You can write like here x, here downstairs you can write x. If you want an exponent, you can go here to the metaexistent, to the first one, and there is exponent. And again, it teaches you that it's keyboard control 6 if you want to use it, but you can again use just the assistant. Click here. When you click here, you judge x square plus 1. So you can use the assistant or the shortcuts to write some nice expressions like this. So if you allow me, I will always use these shortcuts, and you can write it the ugly way or the math assistant way or learn the shortcuts as well. But if I'm doing it too fast and if you don't know how to type it, let me know. Sorry? So let's plot zeta of z from, let's plot the absolute value of this function from z from 1 to 10, say. And this is the function that you get. So it's a positive function in this case, say, from 1 to 10. We know, of course, yes? To get this? Yeah, you go palettes, and then there is basic math assistant there. Palettes, and here basic math assistant. And then these things appear, and you can use this to write fractions, square roots, and so on. All of them, they have shortcuts, but you can use it. So if we plot this zeta function, we see that there are no zeros here. So of course, mathematics cannot solve zeta z equals 0 analytically, right? So of course, you need to do it numerically. So it's good to have some intuition of where the zeros could be. So you can ask to plot, say, for example, in some line like this, and I thought the zeros would be here, but I always forget, yes. Very good. Okay. So let me use some notation that you can understand. So I'm plotting the absolute value of this function, okay? The absolute value of zeta 1/2 plus iz from z equals 0 to 100. And there are zeros here of the absolute value, so zeros of the function, right? So what's your name, sorry? Daniel? So Daniel was asking, how do we find the zeros of zeta function? Okay, so here are many zeros of this zeta function. Zeta function, this is a function that Riemann likes very much, and there was a Riemann conjecture that the zeros of the zeta function are located at 1/2 plus iz, and indeed we see that they are. And we can ask to find some of the zeros. So of course, if we ask to solve, it will not work, because solve is something to solve analytically. So we need something that solves numerically. And we don't know what it is, so we go to help in solve. And then we go to help, we go to the very end, and we look for what could be the thing that we want. And we see the third, the fourth one, which says n solve. This n means solve numerically. Okay? So we can use this n solve, or we can use find root. Find root is the next one, which finds roots of some function. So let's use find root. So let's say find root of this function, find the zeros of this function, for z close to 10. Wow, what happened? Sorry, give me 1 second. Okay. So I asked to find the roots of this function, zeta of 1/2 plus iz, for z close to 20. And it told me that the zero is at 21.022 plus some very small complex part, 10 to the minus 14. Of course, this 10 to the minus 14 is numerical error that Mathematica was trying to solve. And within the precision that she solved, she got this garbage. So this tells you already that the error is something like 14 digits or something. Okay? And this is this 21. This is the second zero here, this one which is close. It's this one here. Okay. Does it answer your question? This is, for example, how you would find the zeros of a function. Of course, there are many, and you need to tell, look close to this guy. Yes? Is the I capital? And zeta with capital Z? Very good. Let's see. There is a dot here.
No, 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 no. Dot here would no, this dot would do something. But you need space.
Or you need space.
Okay, so did everyone get this? So this is, for example, this function, zeta function. Here is one of the zeros of the zeta function. Yes. Okay, this was inside information because I knew in advance that the zeros of this function were along a vertical line with real part 1/2. Okay? And that information you can go to Wikipedia and find out why. It's related to some conjecture, Riemann, and so on, and it was a tricky question of Daniel trying to catch me. Okay, very good. Now, yeah.
Just now I typed from 0 to 20.
The solution is the same. It was just numerical error what you were getting. It was the same. It was 21.022 and you had an extra one there, it's the same. But normally, yeah. So, okay. But to ask your question, so let's see find root. Let's click find root and go to help. We select find root and we go to help. Now, sometimes you don't want to go to help. That opens a new window and so on. You just want to know what arguments does find root ask. Then you can just put a question mark before find root and click enter. And this tells you what's the syntax of find root. Sometimes this is all you need. You don't care to open a help window. And it says here, find root, give me something to find the root, give me the variable and give me the starting point. So this tells you what's the syntax. X close to the point. I think what you did looks for x inside an interval, but somehow it's not here in the syntax, so I'm a bit confused by that. So the syntax is, you tell what you want to find the zero of, this function, then this is the variable, start looking here. If I ask start looking close to 40, probably I'll find this guy, and so on. Okay, very good. So this is about replacements, this was a small detour. Now we can have more replacements. Let's do this example. 1 plus x times 1 plus x times 1 plus x. Let's replace this. And let's suppose we want to say that 1 plus x, now we are doing replacements. Replacements work like this. 1 plus x goes to 1. Now, a mistake that most of you will do, that I am about to do, but I will fix it soon, is that I wrote slash dot, but then I didn't write any space. So it doesn't know it's a replacement. This means divide by 0.1 plus x going to this. So I need a space before this dot and the 1, between the dot and the 1, such that it is replaced. Okay? So this means take this expression and replace 1 plus x by 1. Okay? When I do it, this is what I get, which is fine. So if she went here, 1 plus x becomes 1, and then I get just 1 plus x. But now when I look at this, I see I could go on. There's still a 1 plus x here that I could get rid. And when I will do it, there will be another 1 plus x that I could get rid of. So what I want to tell Mathematica is replace until there's nothing else to do. So replace many times. Okay? That, for that, you use the same syntax with two slashes. So with two slashes means replace what comes next many times until there's nothing else to replace. And when you run this, you get just one. So she did exactly what we wanted to do. She did this the same as putting this replacement here three times. Now, Let's write another expression. 1 minus. Okay. Let's write a new section, even though this section is very small, but let's start it anyway. We call delayed replacements, and let's close this one. Can I close this one? Is everyone okay? So delayed replacements. So, but inside this delayed replacements, I will also teach you about how to insert some nice symbols. So often in Mathematica, we want to use alpha. Right? It's a variable that we like very much for indices, for variable, and so on. But we don't like writing alpha. So if we write alpha times beta, this is the way you would do. And this is what it is. It's alpha times beta. So it's a variable called alpha times a variable called beta. If we ask, what's the tree form of this? Well, it's a product times of two objects, one called alpha and one called beta. Okay? So it makes sense. Now, what we want is to make this thing nice often, just for statical reasons. So we can, another way of inserting alpha, which is much nicer, is click escape. And when you click escape, this funny symbol appears with three vertical dots. Escape. So in the upper left corner. Esc. Then you click A, and then you click Esc again. And it becomes an alpha. Okay? So X, three dots appear, then you put A, then ask again. And an alpha appears. And now you can, of course, do the same. X, B, X, and a beta appears. So alpha times beta, this is much nicer than just writing alpha space beta. Of course, this is the way we want to do it. Okay? So if we ask, what's the tree form of this? I get times of now these nice letters, alpha and beta. Okay? So no one complained above. I'm a bit worried. But here I used this tree form at the end. I should use here. I didn't tell you yet that you can use functions in a slightly different way. So was it because it was too fast, or did you know this already, or you didn't even notice that I did it in this funny way? Yes.
You said to make the letter alpha where you click escape and then type A, or click escape
escape,
and then
alpha. Escape, A, escape.
Yes.
A.
Okay.
Alpha also works.
And suppose that you want a Greek letter and you're not certain which Latin letter it might correspond to.
You can also type alpha if you want. So if you want escape, alpha escape, it also works. Escape, chi escape, escape, zeta escape. Okay? So if you are not sure, you can just type the letter itself. You can use it for other stuff. You can use. Okay, it's fine. In particular, escape, pi escape. So this gives pi. Okay? So just keep escape, pi escape.
Patrick,
yes.
Is that pi like some variable that you can, you know, just use? Or
no, this is really pi. You can ask, what's the numerical value of this guy? It's 3.4.
Okay.
Very good. So pi is 3.4. Of course, if we ask what's the numerical value of alpha, of course it doesn't make sense. Okay, very good. So now we can have an expression which is something like this. 1 minus 1 plus pi times 2 minus pi. And you can divide all this. So I selected everything and then I click control slash by pi. Okay? So if this is a bit too fast, just do it with brackets. Put one more parenthesis and divide by pi. Okay? Now, let's use our imagination and think that we have some huge expression. And somewhere in this huge expression, there are exponentials like this. Here, the expression is not huge, it's just the exponential itself. But often, you have some huge expression, and you don't want the mathematics to simplify this huge mess. You want to help her a bit and to tell, first, look at exponents and simplify the exponent. Then the expression becomes smaller. Now look at cosines and simplify what is inside the cosines and something like this. So often you need to help her, otherwise she will never finish. In the same way that that's how you do simplifications. So what you want to do is to say exponential of something goes to exponential of simplify of that something. And now this doesn't work, which is kind of which you might be surprised. So this is tau exponential of something goes to exponential of simplify that something. So why doesn't it work? Any guesses? It's related to the very first thing I taught. Yes.
Yeah, probably because it tries to simplify before it knows what x is.
Excellent. Because it's exactly that. Because what is exponential of simplify of x? Well, what is simplify of x? It's x. There's nothing to simplify. So it tells you that when you see exp of x replaced by exp of x. Okay, big thing. It does nothing. Right? So exactly, what's your name? Ruben. Exactly as Ruben was saying, what Mathematica is doing, first she's computing exponential of simplify of x. That's just e to the x. And then it's just replacing e to the x by e to the x, doing nothing. What we want is to tell her, only when you know what is x, do this replacement. So instead of using this symbol to make it delayed, we use tuck. Okay, so this is tuck. Sorry. The second one is this. But as soon as you write a space, it becomes this funny arrow. So let's try with that. And that, exactly as Ruben is saying, it will only replace by this once you know what x is. And if you do this, now it works. It goes here, it simplifies what is inside, which is zero, in fact, and the exponential of zero is just one. Note that the color here, x is blue, and here x is green. This is very helpful. It tells you exactly that here x is delayed. She doesn't know yet what to do here. And here x will be computed immediately, and that's why it is blue. Okay? It's also useful, this blue versus these colors, when you want to use some functions. For example, you want to say S3 of x, or X3 of cosine of x squared plus sine of x squared. You run, and S3 is not a defined function, so it just returns the same thing as the input. But remember that we used already a function S2 that we defined. It was this simplify. So if I run the same thing with S2 instead of S3, S2 is black. The fact that it is black means it is defined. Mathematica knows what this function is. It knows something about this function. It knows nothing about this one. So if you have a huge notebook and you have some functions above and downstairs you are using them, if you see that it is blue, it means that you wrote it wrongly. There is some typo and you need to fix it because otherwise it should be black. Okay. Are we almost done? No. Okay, there's no solution. Now let's learn something else about the applying stuff and mapping stuff. This is also important. So let's make a break in 15 minutes, but for now let's try to at least introduce this apply and map. So again, we write apply and map, and we close this first section. And now we want to learn how to use functions. For example, we do cosine of pi. Okay. So this is how we use a function. We put a function, then square brackets, the argument, and square brackets. Of course, by now you know this already. You have seen me several times using this. Simplify of stuff and so on, right? Now, there are other ways of applying functions. One way, which is, say, more, the mathematicians would probably like this one best, is to say, take the map cosine and apply the map to pi. Okay, this is compose cosine with pi. So if you do this, you get minus one as well. Okay? This is exactly the same as this. Just another way of inserting cosine of something. You write cosine, apply it to something. And yet another way is you write pi, and then you say apply cosine to whatever is to the left. And this also works. So there are these three ways of writing functions. This one is my least favorite, but it's up to you. So why would we use sometimes something like this? Because, for example, you might want to have cosine applied to pi, but apply arc sine to the result, and then this immediately composes. Okay. So this is cosine of pi, this is arc sine of minus 1. Okay. And we can have, say, apply numeric to this. So you see that if you would write this in the usual way, it would have brackets everywhere. It would be n of arc sine of cosine of pi. So if you compare the elegance, this is much nicer to read. You just say, I have pi, apply cosine, then apply arc sine, then make it numerical. Whereas here, you have to decode all these brackets. It's very easy to do mistakes and not to see the expressions properly. Similarly, about defining functions, there are also different ways of applying these functions. You can define functions. So let's define some functions. F1 of x, which can be cosine of x plus exponential of x. And I put semicolon not to show the output. This is one way of defining a function. Another way of defining a function, okay, this one I will skip. Okay, let me just teach you two ways of defining a function. Another way, which is very useful, which is called F4, because there were other two examples that I have, but I'm not going to show you, is to say that this function F4 does the following. It takes cosine of the argument plus exponential of the argument, and then you put this symbol to say that you are done defining the function. So this means end of definition. You see this one? It's an argument-free definition. So you just say F4. It has an argument. This is what this symbol means. And F4 of something puts the argument here and the argument here, and that's it. So let's apply this. So if you want, F1 of y gives e to the y plus cosine of y. F4 of y gives the same thing. So these are absolutely equivalent ways of defining the function. Okay. Now, so again, we can do F1 of pi, or we can do pi/F4, whatever. It gives exactly the same thing. Okay? Now, this way of defining a function, it has a big advantage, which is sometimes very useful. Suppose you have some expression and want to apply this function to the expression, cosine plus exponential of the argument. Yes. This means that you are done defining. This is end of definition. This tells you that the function is defined. So suppose I have this function here. Okay. This is the function. Okay. So if you run, this is what the function is. And I might want to apply this function to pi, but I want to apply it, and I don't want to give it a name. I don't want to use the memory to know what this function is. I just want to apply it once, and that's it. I'm not going to use it again. So then I can define it and apply it immediately. So I define it, and then I apply it. I act with it on 5. So you see this way of using the function, this is exactly what it is. I say, this function, apply it to 5. Okay? This is exactly the same as when we say cosine apply to 5, except that we are defining the function and applying the function. So this is often useful, and it's equivalent to doing 5/, and then act with 5 with this function. Okay? So sometimes we want to say, as I was telling you before, simplify x plus 1, but it's something that you might want to use once. Right? So if you want to use just once, you are not going to do a function S2 that does this. You are going to say You have cosine of x squared plus sine of x squared. And you want to do it, simplify the argument plus 1. And you just say, do it. And this gives 2. Okay? So I define the function. This is what the definition is. So here it is, argument plus 1, end of definition. And I apply it immediately. Okay? So this way, there's no functions being defined. The code is cleaner, and often you just want to do it once, and that's it. You can do, for example, f2 is equal first argument to the power of second argument. Done. And now you can ask f2 of x comma y. It's x to the y. But then, yeah, you can also define functions like this with more than one argument. So this is just an argument free. This is exactly equivalent to defining an alternative way is okay? So these two definitions here are absolutely equivalent. Okay? Okay? So both give 2 to the power 3, which is 8. 2 to the power 3, which is 8. So these are two equivalent definitions of this. Okay. So now we need to go on with this more abstract stuff, and I will now teach you about distributes and headers. Who was familiar with everything I said so far? Okay, who was familiar with most of the things I said so far? Okay. So not that many people. Okay, so at least, is everyone following? Am I going too fast? Okay, any question? I'm sure you must have some question right now. Yes. Yes. You probably do F1. You select something and click F1. I do Control Shift F, but you probably should be just F1. More questions? Yes. Good. So there are three important differences. There is green, white, and black. A function is black if it was already defined. So if I write here F5 of x, F5 is blue. If I write F4 of x, F4 is black. Because F4 was defined before. If you remember, F4 was the function e to the x plus cosine, F5 was not. The fact that F5 is blue and F4 is black tells you exactly that F5, Mathematica knows nothing about F5, Mathematica knows something about F4. Okay? So this is two of the colors which are important. If you want to ask Mathematica, what exactly do you know about F4? You click question mark F4, and Mathematica tells you F4 is a global function defined as cosine plus exponential. Okay? Yes. You can now redefine F4. If you redefine it, will overrun this. If you write F4 equals something else, so if you write F4 is equal to sine of the argument times exponential of the argument, end of definition. Okay? And now you ask, what is F4? Now F4 is a function which has a new definition. Okay? And there is another important color, which is green. Here, x appears blue. So when we do this, for example, x appears green here, which means I don't know yet what is x and y. And here, the fact that it appears blue means that this right-hand side will be computed immediately. Whereas if you put two dots here, which means only evaluate this when I tell you what x and y is, this would appear green, which tells that it's delayed. So green tells that it will be delayed, whereas blue tells that it will be computed immediately when it is on the right-hand side. Okay. More questions? Yes.
Probably control 4. You're using Windows. Probably control 4 or alt 4.
Yeah, it says alt 4 on the okay. Size, but doesn't work.
So when you click alt 4, maybe you think nothing is working, but then you start typing and it will start appearing as a typo. So try going to a new cell, click alt 4, nothing happens, but then write something and you will see that it will appear in typo style. It does not.
If you go to the horizontal, like underneath the cell, and then.
So you must be in. You must. Okay, very good. You select this, yes. Alt 4. Must be this one, not that one. Yeah. Yeah, are they the same? Maybe if you have num lock, maybe now it would be the same. Right, so. Anyway, it is that. Yes.
Can I ask? Can I
of course.
Ask something? I don't know why this is not working.
What is not working?
It just shows F1 line. Did I? Is there a syntax error?
No, you didn't. You just didn't run this. You did run. Let me look at it in the break. It should work. I'm surprised. Okay. So we have to learn some more grammar before we can start speaking. So let me tell you about distribute and headers. So we have this A, B, C, D. We have this list. So again, remember how Mathematica thinks of this guy. He thinks of it as a list with four arguments, A, B, C, D. And you might want to apply some function to A, to B, to C, and to D. This means to distribute some function over the elements of the list. So if you say that, let me apply H to A, B, C, D. Will this work? No, this will give you a function of a list. It's like a function of a vector, like our scattering amplitude is a function of n vectors. Right? I'm not applying the function to each element of the vector. That's fine, that's how it should be. So if you ask, what's the full form of this? It tells it's H of list of A, B, C, D. Okay, perfectly fine, this is how it should be. So what you want to do, if you want to distribute it, is slash at. This is what it does. So if you use distribute, to use distribute, you use this slash at means take H, apply to A, apply to B, apply to C, apply to D. Now you get this. Okay? So this applies something over the first elements, the first branches of a tree. Okay? So what it did is A, B, C, D. It went to the first branch and applied H to each of these guys. Here, 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 and here. Right? So if we see the tree form after applying this, to each element it replaced, it added H to the first branch. Okay, to the first level. Okay? Now, we can do something interesting. We can have A plus B plus C plus D. Now, How does Mathematica see A plus B plus C plus D? Well, let's ask. We can have full form or tree form. Let's do tree form of this. So you see, it's not very different from a list. The only difference is that there is a plus here. Instead of list with elements A, B, C, D, now it's plus, the function plus, with arguments A, B, C, D, which adds the four arguments. So in the same way that I could apply H and go here and replace this by H of A, H of B, H of C, H of D, if all we are doing is manipulating trees, I can also do it right now. So it's not a big difference. So I can, it's also useful to do, apply H to this sum. And it gives H of A plus H of B plus H of C plus H of D. Okay? So it just looked at the expression. It was a tree with plus, and then it just applied H. By the way, this guy here, the big boss, this plus here, the one that appears on the top, before it was a list, this is what is called the header. Okay, this is the header of the expression. It's what stands at the very top of the tree. Here it's plus, here it's tree. It's a list. Okay? So if you have, say, cosine of x and ask what's tree form, this is cosine of x. It's a simple tree. What's the header of this guy? Cosine. Okay? Now, something that is useful often is look at some expression which has some header and replace that header by something else. So instead of cosine of x, we can say go remove the header and put a sign instead of the cosine. And that's done by double add. So double add goes to the tree, looks at the head, and replaces the head by what stands before. Okay? So a more useful example is, for example, A, B, C, D. This is a list, but say instead of list, replace this by plus. And now it replaced by plus, and it gave A plus B plus C plus D. Or you can say replace it by times. And it replaced by A times B times C times D. Okay? So this looks at the header and replaces the header by whatever you want. So you can have times replaced by minus 1, minus 1, 2, 3, and this will give 6. It will replace list of these elements by times of these elements, and product of all these elements gives 6. Very good. So last one before the break, and last grammar stuff that I will teach you is patterns. Yes, we already used some patterns, actually. Yes.
The list,
yeah,
and also elements that are added together. What else? What in general can we?
Anything. So whenever you have some expression, it is a tree. So if you write f of a, b, c, d, e, and you ask, what is this? It's a tree. It has f of 5 arguments. Whatever f is, you can now apply h to it. And it gives f of h of a, h of b, h of c. So I can do it to times, to plus, whatever, any function that is not yet defined, like this f, whatever. So this means whenever you have a tree, look at the header. There are lines coming from the header. Put a function in between those lines. Apply something to each of the branch of the tree. Now, patterns. We already used some replacement rules. So we can have, say, f is not defined, okay? F of 2, 3 plus f of 3, and then say f of something goes to 0. Remember, we had exponential of something goes to simplify of something. Now I'm saying f of something goes to 0. And when I run it, I get f of 2, 3. Why? Because, again, what does Mathematica do? She looks, she tries to compare the trees. This means f with one branch coming out, like cosine of x. It was just a vertical line. But if it has two arguments, more than one argument, it doesn't work. So if you want, you can have f of 2, 3 plus f of 3. And then say f of two arguments, a and b, goes to 0. And now it kills the first one, so it means it goes something that is f, and then two branches coming out, it sets it to 0. And now it kills the second, the first one and not the second one. Okay? So this pattern means f with something coming out, one line coming out. For example, if I have f of cosine of a, what is tree form? This is just f with a single line coming out, and then there's a single element that turns out to have more branches, but that's irrelevant. So if I say that this guy, if I say f of a goes to 0, it does kill it, because it obeys this pattern. It's f with something else, some element, some branch coming out, a single one. And here it's two elements. One of them could be more complicated, doesn't matter, but it's two branches. So this sets to 0. So then what you would like to do sometimes is set to 0 f, which has any number of elements. It can be one or it can be more than one. And what you do is you put two underscores. So if you put two underscores here, it means either one or two or more elements. Okay? And that gives 0. Okay? Now let's do a more complicated example. 1, 2, 3, 4 plus f, 2, 3, 4. Any questions so far? F of 3, 4 plus f of 3, 5 plus f of 5 plus f of 4. And now let's say that f of something, comma, 4 goes... Something great about mathematics is that there's no undo. So I was asking a developer why they have no undo. They say it's hard. Okay. Okay, very good. So this tells that f of something, comma 4, goes to 0. So which guys will it set to 0, the way it is done? Sorry? F34. Only F34? What about this one? This one, no, because it has more than one argument. So only indeed F34. Let's put a plus here. Sorry. So indeed, what's your name? Natasha. As Natasha said, only F34 is killed. So how would we do to kill also the first two? We'll put double underscore to say more than one element eventually. But then it doesn't kill this one, which has just F4. Then you might also want one, two arguments, three arguments, four arguments, also zero arguments also. If you have nothing, could also be. And can you guess how would you do including zero arguments? What could it be? Three underscores. So three underscores means either one argument, two arguments, three arguments, and so on, or no argument at all. So it means also f of nothing and then a 4. Okay? So these are what's called patterns. Let's look at and identify this kind of patterns. Okay? Very good. Let me just copy this. And suppose I have, say, 2, 2, comma 4 here. And then something that I can have is, for example, f of a, comma a, go, and 4 goes to 0. So this just tells me, look at f with three arguments, and if the first two are equal, and then there is a 4, replace that by 0, and it kills this one, which has 2, 2, 4. Okay? Also very useful to know. Any questions? So let's resume at 11. Let's make a 20-minute break. And we will then start doing some funny examples with mathematics. What exactly can we do? Very good. Questions for those who are... any questions otherwise? Yes.
When you start a new cell, you don't get an extra line at the beginning. Like when I start up a new cell, it automatically leaves a line and goes to the second line. How do you change that?
Let me understand. Okay, can you, so when I start a new cell, so I click here, I get N.
You just get the one line. Oh, so, okay, the difference is you just start typing as opposed to pressing enter. If you press enter,
that's right. That's right. So inside a cell, you can press enter many times and write stuff like this. This does nothing. It just defines two things. And you can click backspace to erase the first two erased lines and so on as usual.
Yeah, if you start a line from the horizontal.
If you start a line from horizontal, you just start typing immediately. You don't click enter.
Yeah.
You start typing. Yeah.
Is there a convenient way to delete a cell?
Yes, select the cell and click delete. So you can click shift up. So when I'm here, what I do is, you see, I click shift up, 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 and it selected the cell. Then I click delete.
How do you clear the workspace memory?
Sorry?
How do you clear the workspace memory?
The what space memory?
The workspace memory.
What is that?
Just kill all the variables.
Quit the kernel.
Kernel. Okay.
Just quit
the
kernel.
You can quit the kernel. Yes.
I know when you're running two notebooks in parallel, it shares the variables between them.
It does.
How do you turn that off here?
So if you want not to share the variables, the simplest way and the simplest thing to do is to have more than one kernel defined. So I have here, for example, I use this kind of kernel. So I use local, which is the one that is being used now. So, but you can define other kernels. You can click kernel configuration options, introduce a new kernel. And when you have a notebook, then you specify which kernel should this notebook use. So this notebook is using the standard one. If I open a new notebook, I would then tell her, use the other kernel. And then it will not be sharing the definition.
So you have to set it.
You have to set it. Otherwise, you can also do something different. But you can also use, I think you can also use notebook default context. And you can say unique to this notebook. And that will also not share the definition. More.
Have the underscore behind the A.
Yes.
Or X.
Absolutely.
Yeah. What does that mean again? Sorry, I missed
this.
That. Yeah. Yeah.
Some variable. This means a variable, an unknown variable.
It can be any letter or.
It can be any object which is single. It can be any letter, but more than that. This you see here, A is a 2, 2, 2, right? But if this 2 was some object that had further structure, like if this 2 was cosine of x, it would also work. Because cosine of x is also per se a 3 with a single element. Right? So it's any single object. So if I replace this by cosine of y, this also works. It also got rid of this one. Because this tells that, look at f, which has 3 branches. One branch, the same branch, and then 4. The fact that you have one branch and then the same branch doesn't mean that branch finishes here or continues down. It just means that it is the same. You see? So you have f with one branch, one variable, the second variable, and then if it's a letter, it stops there, right? If it is cosine of something or some function, it goes further down. But what Mathematica does is it compares the first two branches. If they are the same, and then if there is a 4, it replaces by 0.
So a different letter B or C would just mean this is another.
That's right. So if I use here a B, it means that this guy doesn't need to be equal to this. It means that F with 3 arguments and the last one is a 4, set to 0. But A and B can be 2 different trees.
And can be the same one also.
They can be the same or different. Whereas when you put AA, they must be the same.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yes?
Is there a convenient way to insert a cell between two existing cells?
Yes, you just click here, and there will be an horizontal line, and then you start typing. Yeah, so you can just click here. Now there is an horizontal line, and then you start typing. And then your cell automatically appears. Yes? So the question is, if I have something like this, so if I have cosine of x plus 1 times x plus 1 plus sine of z. Imagine I find this expression, and then I see that 1 plus x appears a lot, right? So I want to say that when you find 1 plus x, replace it by y. It will certainly help. But now let's see what this works. Here I did something wrong. I forgot the space. But then what I did is I took this expression and I divided by this. So I got this mess. You see? So what I have is I divided sine by 0.1 and I got 10 times sine. I added x to the expression, and then this is a replacement that goes to y. So you see, what I got by not putting a space was this expression goes to y. I got a replacement rule. Whereas if I put a space, it means something completely different. It means now replace 1 plus x by y. Okay? So it is just a question of whether this dot belongs to the 1. Is this a 0.1, a 0.1, or is it a replacement? So if you don't put a space, the dot by default belongs to the 1. More?
Yes? For the replacement, though. Sorry, for the replacement, so you did, I think it was AA, was it? So
it was,
saying that the two trees are the same. I'm slightly above.
That's right.
So cell 1, 3, 4. Yeah, I mean, is there a way to do it such that both are different? I mean, both must be different.
Both must be different. Okay, so let's try to do that. So let's add here, for example, 5. And then we want to do the following, to kill the one that is different, but not the one that is the same, right? So we want to say AB goes to 0, but that will kill both whether they are different or whether they are the same. Right?
Yes.
So how do you propose to solve this problem? I think you already have everything that it takes to solve it. Using the tool that we developed. So you can say, first, let's delay the replacement. Okay? Now you can say, if A is equal to B, 0. Okay? Or not equal, you put an exclamation mark, it means not, negation. If it's not equal to B, 0. If it is equal, F, A, B, comma 4. So this killed the 3, 5, 4, but it did not kill the one where they are. Okay, there is a fancier way of doing it, but I think for now I will just use this. There is a way of saying, do this replacement only if. But I think this is enough for now. So you see, I have delayed. So now she will only redo this replacement after knowing what A and B are, otherwise this will not work. And then she tries to check, is A equal to B? And then do the negation of that. Another option would be to swap the substance, of course. So, for example, she goes here and says, cosine of y is equal to cosine of y. Yes, it's true. I negate, I get false. But then if it's false, I return f of ab, 4. If it's true, I return 0, which is what I do for f, 3, 5, 4. Yes?
I missed this a long time ago. It sounds like there are two ways to introduce delays, one with the colon and one with the underscore.
No, underscore means a variable that is whatever it takes, but the only way, the way to introduce delay is this is a delay in a definition, this is a delay in a replacement. Okay? So if you want to define something, some variable of x, you always use underscore for x, because x is a variable. You don't know yet what x is. If you define a function saying that g of x without underscore is equal to x squared, and then you ask g of 5, it will not work. Because this tells that g of the letter x is x squared, not of the variable x. So g, this just knows what is f of x. Sorry, what is g of x? Oh, sorry. G of 5 doesn't work, g of x is x squared. So if you don't use underscore, it doesn't know that x is something that you will put here. She thinks that it's really the letter x. Okay? Sometimes this might make sense. For example, you want to say that some function of the speed of light is equal to 1, f of c equal to 1. And you want C to be C, to be the letter C. Like here, the letter X. G at the point X is X squared. But then G of 5, it doesn't know what it is. So if you put underscore, then of course it gives 25. More questions? So let's start at 10 past 11. Okay, let's restart the time class 11.